You're listening to the Art of Play podcast. This podcast is about play, not just childhood play, all play. This podcast is exploring play as a means of not just being better adults, but better, well-rounded humans. Happy, happy Friday, everyone. So glad you're here listening today. I'm happy to be sharing today about something that has been on my mind for a bit. It's spurred by screen time in general, but I want to talk about the things that fill our lives in ways we may not intend, using screen time as the example. First, let's talk about screen time and how it's really a sneaky filler. Then let's go over why play on a screen doesn't help the play deficit. And finally, let's talk about some research about why we have to fight for the best of our productive selves. Screen time. It's something parents have debated for their children since the dawn of television. How much is too much and what are the consequences? I have been enthralled with my children's desire to be on screen. Just as an intro into my own backstory, I was very limited in what I was allowed to watch on TV as a child. And to be honest, the setup of our TV didn't really help. So we had an 11-inch black and white TV until I think I was in junior high before we got a color TV. And we had no cable television, so it was a very limited local channel selection. And I grew up fascinated by information. I remember watching nature on Saturday nights on, I think it was KBYU or KUTV. It was the PBS stations. And I am positive I was one of those kids that went to friends' houses that you had to drag away from the movie playing on the TV, or the kid who stayed clear to the end of the credits of a movie just to see anything pretty much on a color screen. So that was my background. And then fast forward to my own children's experience, and they have a myriad of choices for their screen options. They also have a equipment junkie father who loves options and having some high quality options as far as sound and visual experiences. So they have hundreds of options at their fingertips. They have friends with multiple other resources, and they have more to do on screens than I can even fathom, and more than, honestly, than I allow them to get through. My problem, both as a parent and as a person experienced with sort of developing my own creative resources, is that they are not really learning from the majority of the resources they have at their fingertips on a screen. So they may be learning to problem solve in a way I've never been good at, say on a video game, or they may get to learn from the National Geographic resource on Disney Plus, stuff that I didn't actually get to see. But they're not getting out and getting as much creative adventure as I would like. And some of that is due to my own, you know, withholding of the ability for them to have a free reign of the places that they can explore close to our home. But they resort to screen time to unwind or to relax, as well as keeping themselves entertained. It's become the excuse that fills time. It really just fills time. It fills awkward gaps in conversations with friends. It fills time when the weather turns and we can't swim or be outside on bikes or scooters. It fills time when Jared and I are on a date. It fills time when they are task avoidant or when they're done with chores, and it's a really big draw in their lives. So, sorry, I got on a little bit of a tangent, but I think this is actually a really common problem, and not just for the children of this world. So one fascinating thing I found out this week is, did you know that every day on YouTube, 1 billion hours of video is watched? 1 billion with a B. Every single day. That's over 114,000 years per day. Is anyone else as shocked as I am by that number? It's just so much time. That's so much time. And I get that spread over, you know, 7 billion people on the planet, that's, you know, an hour of a day for every seventh person. But the concentration of that number has to be people that have internet access and streaming all of that video. Can you imagine if that time was spent innovating instead, or just being creative in some way, or being, you know, in service of another human being? If you were to take, so I mean, like, just to put that into comparison, if you were to take a company the size of Apple with 137,000 employees and had each employee work a 40-hour week, no holidays, it would take them 3.5 years to get to 1 billion hours of productive time. Like, that's a huge company working full-time. 1 billion hours in one day is outrageous. And that is the number of hours people spent on YouTube before COVID-19, before the pandemic. So just let that sink in. I mean, it could play in the background for people. It could play sometimes mindlessly to get your mind off a hard day. It could play some commentary on a subject you find fascinating. It could be teaching you how to do something. And don't take this as I'm knocking YouTube, as honestly, it's been a really valuable resource for me personally. I have learned how to tile from YouTube. And if you don't know about my tiling skills, you should go back through my personal Instagram. It's Sarah E. Bauer. And honestly, I find great, what's the word I'm looking for? I find really great satisfaction in tiling. So I've tiled a lot of things. I've also looked up, you know, really practical things like how to fix my disposal, what's wrong with my washing machine, diagnose a garden woe, and, you know, how to train my dog. The list goes on and on and on. It is a valuable resource, and quite frankly, it's an amazing asset to this world. But what it demonstrates is the ability for so much information to drown out any need to think new original thought, because not everything on YouTube is obviously educational and meant to further the world. A lot of it's meant to sell a product. A lot of it is meant for, you know, a time suck, just listening to somebody ramble. The platform is designed to feed you more information that you possibly could be interested in, not necessarily information you're seeking out or trying to find. It literally suggests things for you to watch next based on your watch history. And it does that on purpose to keep you on the platform. So in some cases, that can be detrimental. So especially when you're looking for, when you go to a platform like YouTube, let's just continue using them as the example. It can be when you're in an avoidant behavior and you're looking for something to fill a time hole, it literally just sucks the time away from you. It just will fill that time. It will suggest more and more things. And if it piqued your interest once, it might pique your interest in the next thing, and they can just drag you into hours and hours of consuming content. So if you're really actually interested in this, I know I'm going on and on about this, but the New York Times put out a fascinating 8-episode podcast called The Rabbit Hole. It was actually recommended by an artist friend of mine. And it's about 4 hours of collective listening between all 8 episodes. But it's really well worth your time if you're thinking about how formulas or algorithms that social media companies use to keep you on their platforms are addicting. I mean, they're meant to be addicting. They're meant to sort of feed you those happy little hits in a consistent enough manner to keep you on there. So I found that podcast highly enlightening. And I would recommend it for anyone looking to pinpoint why social media gets that rap. And I'll link that in the show notes, which, by the way, you can access through the platform you listen to. There should be a link to the episode notes, and that will take you to the notes that I add to each episode. And there's also links that reference transcripts or or, you know, people's podcasts that I'm recommending or people's, you know, books that they're interviewing for. Anyway, just so you know, that's where all of that is. If you can't find it or aren't finding what you're looking for, so please don't hesitate to reach out with questions to me, me directly. That's great. I'm happy to answer questions there. And if I'm unclear on something, absolutely, please reach out. Okay, back to screen time. Why is screen time a problem? Well, for adults, it may not be so detrimental, especially adults that have grown up knowing a world before touch screens. And we have adult brains that don't rely on those hits of, like the continual hit of dopamine, of wanting little tiny successes over and over and over. We've kind of outgrown that need. It's still detrimental to us because we still have that human nature in us. But it's not as detrimental because we can sort of segment our time and our brains a little bit differently. And our screens have generally been designed around making us more productive humans. We have access to every form of communication that we could use to be more productive employees, family members, friends. We use screens as our assistants, and our assistants use their screens to be more effectively efficient. So, not really speaking from experience, I'm not a person who has an assistant, but you understand what I mean. Like the trickle-down effect of efficiency with screens is actually really good for this world. It's a very useful tool. As adults, we have the ability to see ourselves getting more dependent on screens to fill gaps in our lives. It fills the time it takes between meetings, or it fills time waiting for soccer practice to end. It fills the time waiting in line at the DMV. And those gaps in our lives that used to be filled reading a book or talking to somebody you're sitting next to, even learning a new skill like crocheting or something you can keep in a bag, those are all now filled with screens, time on a screen. And that may not be bad. Sometimes that time is spent listening to a podcast, learning something new, reading a news article, or keeping up on correspondence with friends that otherwise we can't actually make time for. There's always a positive flip to that coin, but what I dislike about the screen problem is that there's an ever mounting social pressure to be on that screen interacting in some way. So on social media, or interact in multiple platforms on multiple communication devices. And there's so much pressure to be up on the latest and greatest of nearly everything and up on it in the instant that it comes out. So you don't want to miss a thing. And there's too much emphasis laid on how our appearance on technical platforms is perceived. And we're editing our reality to fit in this 1080 by 1080 digital pixels, which is not a reality that I really think we're evolved to live. I mean, we're evolved to live in a very tactile way, not in a digital way. And I think this lends itself to a real play deficit and an interaction deficit. You know, our initial interactions with the world were very playful, and the deficit in play really kind of stems back to the 1950s when much of the developing world felt a need to increase productivity output. We were communicating better with the rest of the world, and so we streamlined what we could, we adopted new technologies, we embraced change, we tried to further causes that had meaning, we tried to build futures that were worth looking forward to. Somewhere along the way, all of that became, you know, quote unquote, less fun. We slowly eliminated adult leagues and interactive play and neighbor organized, you know, pickup games. We sliced down recess and added instruction time to school days. We increased the pressure to specialize in a particular sport or extracurricular activity earlier in life. Our neighborhoods became less about our village and more about status symbols or about convenience. Our ability to share information globally then led us to compare educational values and GDPs and all of these measures to increase, you know, increase efficiency and increase how we were productive humans. And all of that translated to a personal, you know, a personal view on what we were contributing. And increases in efficiency are good. And right now there are, you know, better outcomes today for many more humans on Earth than were at previously any time in history. And that's fantastic. And there's always room for improvement. But for the most part, I think many of the humans on Earth were united in trying to focus on bettering more lives than just their own. And somehow we've made that shift to just bettering our own instead of the betterment of the whole. And I think part of that's due to these things that we fill our, you know, fill our time with, that we are not focused on the outward, the ways that we interact outwardly with our world. And I think there were a lot of humans on Earth, you know, moving towards bettering more lives just in their own. And in some part, we just forgot about play. Like, it just kind of dropped out of the narrative. It dropped out of the time that we were allotting. I don't think it was a purposeful, let's cut out the way we evolved. They were trying to be better. They were trying to be more efficient. And there were select few that understand, you know, that a drop in play is a problem, either viscerally, you know, I mean, like they just knew observationally or professionally that a deficit in play could be detrimental to society. There were warnings and cautions, you know, there's always been a debate about how much, you know, childhood should be monitored and curated. And some of those were heated and some of those not. And it's fine. It's not a point where no one is playing and that we are restricted so much that we can't, and we're able to still help ourselves. So helping ourselves looks like playing in our own way. That can mean dividing our time wisely between activities that rest our brain and those activities that spur on our creativity. Our brains are not meant to stagnate. So how many of you felt like you had seen the whole internet by the end of the first week of quarantine? Just, there's nothing new to see. We're just looking at this, like we're just glazing over at this point. Or, I mean, maybe not even quarantine. Maybe many of you have been, let's say, recovering from surgery or some sort of illness that allowed you to have so much downtime that you kind of ran out of fascinating things or new intriguing things to participate in or take in. And maybe just like a visit from a friend or a new novel activity was a welcome distraction. It was like this excitement spark in your brain. We like new concepts. We like to chew on new ideas. We like to diversify our knowledge base. We like that. It's part of our hardwiring and it's in our code from playing. That's how humans learn to interact with the world. The problem with being adults with responsibilities and routines and autopilot tendencies is that it feels like all we do is keep everything contained on the rails of our life. We just keep plugging, you know, we're the engine to just keep plugging forward and get to the end of that track. And the problem with life is that it's not really a train on a track. It's not a one size fits all. And it's more like a wide open field for frolicking instead of, you know, a train track on one destination. And if we're continually dragging our baggage of schedules and life and responsibility through that field in a straight line, how much more of the diverse wide world of thought and paths and joy do we miss? How much are we missing because we're focused on just the movement forward and the screen or the, you know, the time filler in any case just fills those gaps between rails. We're just, if it fits in these bounds, it's easy. It's the simple solution. It works, right? It's just a plug and play. We just go forward. And how much of the joy and the broad, you know, depth of life do we miss? Our human nature is meant to find and explore and not really unwind and, and become a bore. I mean, that my need to to rhyme that sentence. So let me see if I can repeat it. Our human nature is meant to find and explore, not unwind and become a bore. So find your play. Really, truly, it can be 5 minutes. I'm telling you, five heart-to-heart minutes of something that you were once good at, something you've never been good at, or something you've only learned about 5 minutes ago. 5 minutes really can spark a change in your brain, and you become a more proactive human and a more productive human if you'll just give yourself that chance. So I know that playing is hard. Play is hard as adults. There's a lot of social shaming, and there's a lot of social cues around the right and wrong ways to play. It's one of those aspects of life that's just going to be hard. You know, sometimes it's just a hang up in our brain. And in fact, I think most things are just a hang up in our brain of like, it just sounds hard. So it's just going to be hard. There will be avenues of play that seem more appropriate than others. And I just wish that you and I and everyone else can find that handful of new experiences or new friend groups or a genre of books that lights us up. Find those new things or find those old things that fire up your joy for life. Or if you don't like the joy for life mentality, maybe you're looking just for more excitement to tackle the new day, or maybe you're just looking for encouragement to find a new way to shake out problems in all other areas. Maybe you just need to feel a little bit light somewhere. And people are, you know, they're creative, but they're more creative when they're playful. So playful people are creative people. Playful people are happy people. Playful people make better employees. And no, that is not some millennial standpoint. Playful people come to better conclusions, they make better decisions, and are more productive. Playful people also increase workplace morale. How many of us have had a really great coworker that was super playful and engaging? Play is also the birthplace for divergent thinking, or thinking of many possible solutions to one problem. Play is also where we learn wholeheartedness. So it's an all-encompassing joy spark. We lean into the good life with all our might, even if it's for 5 or 10 minutes a day, and suddenly new worlds of creative thinking and connections take place. It really works. It can be applied in so many areas. If you're, you know, if you're struggling with certain relationships, or any relationships, or all relationships, it can trigger, you know, creative ways to make those relationships work. It can trigger new hobbies. It can trigger old hobbies. It can reignite your, you know, love of trying out new things. It can, I mean, you can even apply it to family schedules or work goals or team building and just about anything that you as an adult may choose to do with your life, it applies. So try it. Try it. And if you like it, find ways to do more. It's really as simple as that. Okay, we've recapped screen time as a potential killer of productivity and connection, and how we can refocus that into real play, real engagement with our brain. And I'm not trying to tout that screen time is the, you know, all-encompassing evil. I'm just giving you the, you know, the statistics of that example. And that play, that real play, can feed our mind and our soul. So then we talked about how play brings out the best in our productive old adult selves. And it's been a good recap. And I want you to think, when you are jump roping or playing a board game or trying to outsmart your kids playing tag or just dancing with all your heart to some music, I want you to think how much better it is that you are actively playing rather than being one of the billion hours of YouTube watching that happened that day. It doesn't matter if you've already watched YouTube that day. If you're taking time to play, I want you to think with gratitude that your brain was hardwired for movement and action, and that you are giving it a place to stretch and reset and give yourself a break and play. So I hope everyone, I mean, that kind of wraps it up for today, but I hope everyone has a safe and happy 4th of July weekend. don't forget to give yourself some real play. Enjoy something. I know that it's not looking like the 4th of July that maybe, you know, is your typical plans for the 4th of July. And I just hope that that you find some way to have some fun and be safe while doing it. This podcast is fueled by my family's mission at the Oliver Fund. We send toys to children in hardship all over the world. So we believe that we have the ability to work hard, and we believe that we have the ability to find value in playing well. It's actually a part of our personal family creed. You can find out more online at theoliverfund.org or on social media at The Oliver Fund and at Art of Play Podcast. Here's to leaving you to your weekend a little more hopeful and hopefully more happily playful, if only for 5 minutes.